Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Gusty winds were a big concern for parade organizers. Just before 10:30, a first-time balloon, a 64-foot-tall Sonic the Hedgehog, was swept into a street lamp at 58th and Broadway and punctured. The balloon captain said the wind was causing problems.
So it's a little more difficult than usual.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and with me as always...
Ben Vanell here. And boys, we didn't touch on this yet, I don't think, but the...
Probably not today. This is pretty early on to have touched on it by now.
The Australian Labor Party won the election here.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
And I'm inspired by, you know, Labor sort of practices. I've decided to unionize.
Oh.
Okay, yep, yep.
I'm unionizing.
Okay.
As an employee of this podcast.
Well. Right.
I want better hours. I want better treatment. More regular breaks.
Welcome to mine and Tommy's podcast, Filthy Casuals. My name's Adam Knox.
In the spirit of, you know, the video game industry.
Yeah, and people are unionizing.
At 1 p.m. today. What kind of better hours are there?
That was like... a bit late.
You said with no shame, I'm getting a coffee, and it was fine. We didn't care.
Yeah, but you should have been even nicer.
Yeah, people are unionizing, and we're able to do this job through the unionizing of everyone who listens to this podcast.
Yes.
In supporting us on Patreon. Patreon.com/filthycasualspod.
You get our videos early, You also get a full bonus podcast every week where we do deep dives on movies. And if you like the vibe and tone of this, it's pretty much the same, but it's about other stuff, TV shows, movies. We riff it up on those sorts of topics. We'll review something and then we'll kind of jump off. And
there's
often episodes where we're just dicking around and being silly. So get on it.
It means the world to us as well. Everyone who signed up to it, thank you. And everyone who might do, thank you. And everyone else who's listening, thank you.
Yeah.
And everyone who doesn't listen, hey, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm just practicing gratitude. And you know what? I'm not great at it yet. Because
I'd be more grateful if the people who don't listen do start listening.
Yes.
If people who don't listen to this podcast, if you're listening right now, start listening. I think you'll like it.
There's always room to improve. Even if you are listening, listen twice.
Maybe you'll catch something on the second time.
Well, one way you can improve from listening to the show is by coming and seeing it live. Mm. We announced this last week. We are doing a big live show in Melbourne, Saturday, July the 2nd at Comedy Republic at 5:30 p.m. And if you're not in Melbourne and you can't make it down for that reason, then you can also get a streaming ticket. It's filmed professionally. It will be available to watch for 24 hours after the gig, but you can also tune in live and watch what's happening.
Streaming tickets are a bit cheaper as well. I don't think we mentioned that last time, but it is cheaper to get a streaming ticket if you're not in Melbourne.
And it should actually work now. Last week that website was down.
The website was down for some reason. The ticketing site that they use at Comedy Republic is also used by other things.
Right.
And it's very like an independent sort of ticket selling thing. So I can't imagine what sort of event they would have had on there to cause this.
Mm.
But people were getting on to buy tickets and it was saying like, you are the 400,000th person in line. I can't imagine what possible event ticketsearch.com could have had that had that many people wanting to buy tickets. But
buying tickets to like the ticket search troubleshooting seminar.
So that was very annoying. That was almost immediately after we went on sale. We had a few people hit us up that they couldn't get the tickets. But that has all been sorted now. So if you tried back then...
Should be.
Well, you know...
Maybe it'll happen again and it'll turn out that our event is the one that is causing it.
I mean, that would be great. That would be a perfect problem
Huge
to have.
News.
But yeah, if you tried then and it didn't work, then it is back up and running now.
And it also, because we're not the ones in charge of streaming, it will only be up for that 24 hours. So it is, it's meant to be a live thing. It's fun for it to be live.
Yep.
So
yeah, you know. I wanted to emphasize, like, if you can come... Please come in person because it's not going to be a good show if everyone watches online.
Right.
We know it's cold. We know it's rainy in Melbourne. but it's one of the best venues I've ever been to for any live thing. It's fantastic.
It is good. Yeah, hey, 400,000 people can't be wrong.
There's other stuff on in that. So come down and they have like a showcase show afterwards of other stand-up if you want to stick around and watch that. It's a good place for a drink.
Yeah.
You're in the heart of the Melbourne Central Business District.
I've done stand-up a bunch of times there and it's a good venue for stand-up.
They
booked me to do a spot there 2 nights before our show, which seems like a wasted opportunity to not just have me on the thing that's immediately after our gig.
Well, you can promote the show.
Absolutely. Show. Flyer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You mentioned before, Ben, video game people are unionizing.
They are.
In the US. Raven Software, who are like a big...
QA, right?
For Call of Duty, yeah. Right. They mainly work on Call of Duty stuff, I think, and it is, I think, specifically the QA people have unionized, which is good. All of the talk about video game labor, poor practices.
Exploitation
over the last few years in particular is starting to be a little bit resolved for some people. Mm. You know, people are doing the right thing about it. Whatever politically you think of unions...
The only correct thing to think is that they're good.
I know. My body was just like, oh, what are you going to do now?
Yeah.
I said that, then it was
you want it to be, like even-handed, but you're like, no, I have a specific position on this.
One of the most difficult surfaces to sit upon in real life is a fence. Mm. They're so thin. They're so high up a lot of the
time. You're bound to fall one way or the other.
It's going
to
hurt.
In the cartoons, they're very like pointy, so you get a little
in real life too, not just cartoons. Plenty of actual fences are quite pointy.
Wire up the top.
But that's cool. It's sort of even outside of the realm of video games in some ways. That's sort of thing.
Right. It's more like local laws and shit like that. But you know, it's good. It's a good thing.
I think it would be too.
It would be a utopian future where we can talk about games that we're enjoying without having to feel a degree of guilt about the horrible work practices that went into the people sacrificing their own mental health and personal lives in order to make this product that we're enjoying.
I don't want to play a game and imagine someone crying.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's why I also want to unionize podcasting, because I want our listeners to be able to listen without going, oh, these guys sound so fucking depressed.
Separate the art from the artist. No, you're right, Adam. I don't want to imagine the person crying because I can already see that in the reflection of the screen that I'm playing on if the light isn't, right in the room.
Yeah.
But Ben, you are wearing a beautiful blue top there.
Okay.
Yes.
Very similar. I can't help but think that maybe this is a deliberate fashion choice by you.
Yep. Yes.
It's almost it's like the work, and you've got these like kind of tan pants on as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're doing the world's cheapest Sonic cosplay. Just the vague color scheme of him.
Yeah, I should have painted my shoes red.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but I have, I did wear blue in honor of the Blue Blur.
Mm-hmm.
Because we watched, it was this morning this dropped?
There were like a couple this week. There was like a short little teaser trailer and then a longer thing featuring more gameplay.
Yeah, they did 7 minutes today.
Sonic, what's it called?
Sonic Frontiers. They did a little 30-second video and they were like, stay tuned in about 7 hours for the longer video. It's like, why don't you just put the longer video up?
I think, made a point to say, because I think it's through IGN, they're doing a sort of, little preview thing. The end of this one, they were like, and there's going to be many more videos coming soon, because this was like very much just about exploration gameplay.
Yeah, and it wasn't honestly particularly interesting.
No, it was not.
It does not look...
I wore a plain blue jumper. Yeah. A plain blue blur.
I wore a salmon shirt because I did not respect the little ball. Mm-hmm. It's like...
Whoever was controlling this little demo walkthrough thing was doing it in kind of an annoying way. Mm-hmm. Just like slowly walking up to bits and then... panning the camera around. It's like, can you play this a bit so we actually know kind of... So it was basically what it looks like is the open world itself is very... very generic looking. It doesn't have any of that kind of Sonic flavor of like the cartoony, like
totally. There's none of the palm trees or the whatever. It's just like green fields. And it looks like Sonic 06, that Xbox 360 one.
It's very real world looking, sort of like
kind of reminded me of Halo Infinite's world. Sure. With less detail. Honestly, Halo had more like crashed ships and
totally.
Stuff.
Totally. It's like a Rust or whatever, where it's just like a blop, there's a field. Yep. Go do stuff in it.
And it looks nice enough, but it's basically. It's still very hard to tell what you're doing because within that there are little bits of like little rails and sort of springs and that kind of sonic-y stuff, but it is hard to get an impression of what they're there for, like what you're
right,
how you're really interacting with them in a gameplay way. Like this person was kind of zipping around them, and it sort of looked fun, the but movement, it looked kind of weirdly tech demo-y almost.
Yes, and the movement looked weird. It looked like kind of you know, just floaty. And
he was doing that when he was walking at the slower speed, the footsteps weren't matching up with the movement. And he was kind of like floating along.
And he ramps up to the highest speed and it looks like Minecraft creator mode sort of thing. You know, you're just sort of flying along, kind of hovering through the world. Yeah, it looks weird.
Yeah.
And then structurally, the impression I got is that it's a bit like something like Bowser's Fury, where it's lots of small, that was lots of small little bits that would be in a bigger Mario level, separated from one another.
Yeah.
A little tower that you would climb that would normally be next, closer to another tower, but in this open world is further from another tower or whatever.
Yeah.
Except the problem is that that was very fun because it was all Mario levels that were broken up like that.
Totally.
And this is all Sonic levels that are broken up like that.
Yeah.
But also without the aesthetic, like the Bowser's Fury stuff. Still had that Mario coat of paint on it. This just looks like a very drab, because it is meant to be Sonic's transported to a mysterious, like, where is he kind of world.
Yes.
And again, it like, I don't know. I still think it looks like it could be okay.
Mm.
But I also don't really trust that it will be because I don't think Sega, like the thing with all these different Sonic games, like there was a lot of stuff in this that at some point they decided is just part of the Sonic 3D canon of him grinding on rails.
Right.
Like they sort of decided at one point was an integral part of Sonic. And it's always felt with Sonic like so many other IPs that have been around for a long time. Even if they experiment and they mix it up, they still have like a core idea of like they know what the fundamentals of this series are. Mm. And with Sonic, they don't seem to have ever really had that down. Like the last major 3D one, Sonic Forces, where they had this like really self-serious storyline and the characters all had guns and stuff like that. Like there's no real overall guiding principle of like, and Bowser's Fury is a great example where they mixed it up, but they've still got this big overriding, this is what Mario is. This is the four or five things that are like, that are unchangeable. We can do whatever else we want outside of that, but these five things have to be there. Whereas this is like, that it's just, it could be any game. It could be any open world game that's just got a little fucking blue thing running around in it.
People mention like, it is lacking those core design Sonic principles of like Sonic 1 through what, 3-ish?
3 and Knuckles, like,
there's no momentum, which was a key thing of Sonic.
Yeah.
Building up momentum to get really, really fast. And then things like, building up momentum and then going straight up the side of a hill, you know, and it's like in this, it's like, no, you jump off a little jumpy thing and then you can just like climb slash walk slash run up the side of buildings rather than having to create momentum and zoom up in a curve, like a ramp, like that's all not there.
And it's part of why Sonic had so much trouble transitioning into 3D, because like the one example of where someone's gotten what Sonic is from the fundamental part of it was Sonic Mania.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that, I don't remember the name of the whitehead. Something like that.
Yeah, Christian Whitehead, that I think is his name. Yeah.
Seemed to have an understanding of exactly that Sonic is this thing about being, it's like a pinball machine almost. You are flying through this thing and quickly reacting to obstacles and zipping through. And in 3D, that level is just harder to build.
Yes.
And they did a few of them in Sonic Adventure 1 and then it just is so resource intensive that they're like, okay, also there's a cat who's slow and he fishes.
Right.
Because we can't build 100... 3D levels in an, like, that's so difficult to do and will take forever.
It is, there's a reason that pinball isn't 3D.
Right.
you know, it's like there are design and physics principles that restrict this. And, like, yeah, you could make a bunch of pinball tables in a 3D world, but that takes away from, I guess, what people would expect from a 3D platformer.
And it will just, the problem that they solved when they moved into 3D with Mario 64 was that we can't build long levels because it'll take too long.
Right.
We can build smaller levels that are denser
with
multiple verticality things in them. And it just doesn't translate to Sonic, which is exactly why then for the second one, they're like, oh, I guess we're partnered with Soap Shoes now and he grinds. Right. And you're right, that hung around for some reason. But then it was, I guess he like is a person and he snowboards and he fucks women now. And I guess in this one, he's a werewolf. And in this one, I guess he like...
Well, at a certain point, they transitioned into it being these very like... still kind of levels, and their version of 3D Sonic was kind of up and down, like Crash Bandicoot style, rather than it being fully kind of 3D. And even that, I tried that Sonic Colors game and they re-released it a few months ago and it was so dull. And I think, you know, we're all ready to see like a fully open world Mario, which Bowser's Fury kind of teased, and then Breath of the Wild, of course, was such a welcome thing for them to do with those series because they had really done some of the best stuff that you can possibly do with the templates that they had for those games in 3D, but they still haven't quite gotten that with Sonic. Yeah. There's not a confined 3D Sonic platformer that's like perfect and great and gets the best out of the concept and fulfills what you would want from that, from playing those games in 2D. So the kind of thing of going like, it's time to go open world. It's like, just make a good 3D platformer, just make a good level-based 3D platformer with him in at first and then do the open world stuff.
Or do 2D still. Like, there were a bunch of games. What was that indie game that you were like, it was like pinball platforming?
Yoku's
Express. Yeah.
So, and there's amazing 2D platformers still coming out. And
Sonic Mania is one of them.
It's crazy that they...
But then think about like Rayman Legends, like introduce other mechanics, like the music levels in that were fantastic, but also just... designing groundbreaking 2D platformer levels is still possible.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, I think the story was that they, that team that made Mania, they wanted, they were ready to do 2 and Sega aborted it. Yeah. So it's like they, I mean, that that tells you so much about how kind of little they get about like just pump out two more of them, make them a trilogy. Like that team building in more of those characters and getting, you know, because, I mean, everyone who loved Sonic back in the day loved that game.
Yeah.
I've been replaying it recently. It's so good. And I like, I'd love for this game to be good. And I guess maybe the whole thing of having, like, a big open plane for him to, like, zoom around in could be really fun because it gets over that problem of how do you kind of have that freedom of that speed in these, like, kind of small, squished-in levels where you still do have to sort of... do the platforming and all that kind of stuff, which didn't really work for me with a lot of things.
Yeah, if it ends up being that the world is barren because you're zipping through it so fast, then it looks weird in trailers maybe, but in practice it works. Like, I'm the same. I would love for this game to be really good, and when everyone listens to this for the second time, like we've already told them that they need to, apparently, that we sound ridiculous because it ends up being the game of the year and whatever. Like, I would love for this game to be good. But
we talk about it all the time, but go back and listen to our first impressions of Breath of the Wild when we went to that hands-on event. We all hated it. We thought we thought that was a nail in the coffin.
We were way off.
Yeah. So, I mean, this could... I mean, yeah, on paper, but again, I just wish it was a bit more... I wish it was a bit more... like cartoony and was doing a bit more of that old school Sonic stuff in its aesthetics rather than this thing of, he's been transported to the real world. It's like there's plenty of games that look like this set in the real world that are great. Like,
it seems like, their pitch had so much like promise of like Sonic's changing into this thing and we're doing an open world and it's going to be different. And then you see this footage and it's like they don't actually have any ideas is the thing that comes through with this. And speaking of open world games that don't have any new ideas, but they're doing them anyway, Pokemon Scarlet and Violet
had a... also another trailer, like a 3-minute one. But this is kind of what I'm talking about with the, like, they experiment with a lot with the Pokemon games, not the mainline ones, but they have all the offshoot ones where they kind of fuck around and do different stuff.
Yeah.
But there is this core, like, unifying idea of, like, this is what Pokemon is. And even if we're doing, like, a weird puzzle game or those weird dungeon games, there still is a core thing that's, like, they're not really... fucking with what the world is.
Right.
You know? And honestly, like, this one is looking more and more like it is structured the same as Arceus, Pokemon Legends, Arceus, I don't remember.
Well, this is the big difference with this one is...
which would be cool. I really like that game.
Yeah. The big difference with this one is that it's open world. It's you can do it in any order.
Yes. They don't say that in the trailer, but on their website they put up with the trailer, it specifically says that you can approach it in any order.
Which is exciting. Like, that's the thing that's kind of got me interested, and this is probably something, not something that I'll engage with it, but... I'm sure there are people that are jazzed about this. You can play. You can have four of you running around in it at the same time, which I'm sure is for some people going to be a big game changer.
Like, you'll probably do that once for a video or something as well.
Yeah,
you know?
True.
Yeah,
true.
It's a neat idea. Yeah. It's kind of. I mean, you've been in the previous one. You could do. you could team up and do battles online, couldn't you? But you couldn't really run through the world.
You've
together.
Had no, I don't believe so. You can do battles, and there have been 2-on-2 battles before. So I guess you've had 4-player Pokemon in the past, I think. But I guess this means that you will have 4-on-1 battles. And you know what? In Sword and Shield, there were those sort of group. Like raids almost against the like mega versions.
Oh, sure,
So they've you know, it's as with Pokemon, it is an evolutionary thing rather than a new thing.
Yeah, but a slow evolution.
They did a
but
classic.
But it looks cool, and I like the three little new Pokemon. And I don't know.
I'm more into the designs of these ones that they've shown off than I had. There's something about them that seems very like. Very old school, very like refined and sort of like classic. Like they're not. They've stopped trying to like. Add too much stuff on and make them like they did a bit of a classic thing that they love to do where they're like, tune in, we're gonna be giving you more information, and it's this huge event where we're gonna be revealing some of the new Pokemon. Strap in, everyone. And then you get to the video and it's like, guess what, it's a pig. I'm like, sick. He looks awesome.
And the pig's name is Lechonk.
That's good.
The idea that Pokemon will just be named after Reddit comments from now on is
But yeah, the starters all look way more appealing to me in this one than the previous one. I don't know if like there's maybe been a slight shift in the art department or the art director's changed or whatever, but it just something about it has a bit nicer of a...
Yeah.
It seems like it's a bit more of a... Yeah, like a back to basics design approach, which I'm into.
But then with some new, because like one of they showed those like the legendary ones you catch at the end, and they're kind of a couple of dragons, one of which has jets. Instead of legs.
Yeah, that's funny. Violet, right?
But, yes, and that's a silly idea in the way of the like DS kind of generation of like, this one's keys and this is a sword. But it works in this one. And I don't know. So it's still insane to me that this game will come out in November.
Yeah.
And the Legends one came out in January. Like two games that are this new format of like open world Pokemon in the same year is the weirdest shit.
Yeah.
At three games, I guess, technically. But
yeah,
it does look like that game was really good, and I am hopeful that this game will continue to be as fun as that.
I still want to know more about how much of the Arceus sort of stuff is in there.
It looks the same.
It does. Yeah. I have a feeling that the like catching of them at least is back to having to do that within battle, which is...
But it had someone sneaking up to one of them in the world.
I still think... I agree, I think, Tommy, in that they... And they probably would have showed if it was real time in open world without being segmented off, right?
I agree with you. Yeah, but yeah, I feel like if they... It's weird to have kind of not said it because that's a thing that people want to
know. I think they're fucking weird.
Yeah.
I think that there's you just literally can't tell until it comes out what anything's going to be.
Because they
were saying the same thing about Sword and Shield where they're like, these are like on the console for the first time, they're kind of open world. And then you got them and you're like, no, they're fucking not. What are you talking about?
And Arceus, they had said very little about.
Right.
You know, we were like, what is this? Is this like a side thing where you just kind of walk around and look at them and then you play it and you're like, oh, it's... A Pokemon, it's like a full Pokemon game. It's got the battling, it's got all of that.
And the stuff that, like, I feel like we would have been even more excited about of, like, it's genuinely open world.
Right.
It's genuinely, like, yes, the combat is sort of real time. The catching is, like, emphasizing, like, if you, like, distract, like, you know, just laying out that fun gameplay loop of Arceus would have been more exciting to us than... Holding back like they are doing with Scarlet and Violet as well.
Yeah. I guess they're still months away. Nintendo has a big thing in this month, June. That's because all those things are coming up soon, right? The PlayStation showcase that is instead of E3 basically is tomorrow.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And that will have PSVR stuff.
Third party games.
Yep. I don't know. I think they've said it's going to be like 20 something minutes, right?
Okay.
So I don't think it's quite of the scale.
No, they'll probably do another 20 minute one in a couple of months as well, right?
September or whatever, probably. Because, the E3 is not happening this year. And Jeff Keighley doing the Summer Games thing was like, hey, everyone, just so you know, like we're doing Summer Games Fest. It's going to be great. But this is like, I think he called it a video game gap year.
Because
of COVID.
Yeah.
Although PlayStation are a part of the Summer Games Fest as well as doing this thing tomorrow.
There will be
a
bunch of stuff, but I think it will be games that we know about. There won't be a lot of big, because anything that got started during COVID
yeah.
will take longer than a normal game to get made.
Yeah. yeah.
And all the ones that were being made have taken longer.
You know what my prediction yeah. is?
What?
They'll announce a PS5 Pro along with the PSVR2.
That would be... I would be very surprised by that.
I'd There's be been surprised.
Whispers
but...
about it, because like...
No, you wouldn't. You're predicting it.
It'd be surprising if it comes true, but I think, you know, it's like, well, they've got another big powerful headset thing.
Yeah.
Sure,
yeah.
I think it's crazy.
I think it's too soon because
it might be too soon.
That's
I
a
think
piece
it's still
of
people
hardware
just
too.
Can't get the, like, right. the originals. Like, there's really no need for them yeah. to put a new thing out on the market.
Maybe
it's
underpowered
to go
one.
For when.
Well,
with, maybe an underpowered one with more available parts.
While a ton of, because they said they will.
A PS5 amateur.
Yeah.
They said they will have wrapped up making PS4 games by 2025.
Yeah,
the
right.
other day.
Jesus Christ.
Which isn't that weird, because like a lot of those soccer ones and whatever will come out on the previous generation for a long time.
That's
more
true.
Than regular games.
That's true.
But
I reckon Nintendo's next big direct is going to happen June 9 because that's the day before the Mario soccer game comes out. So they'll have one on June 9 and 25 minutes of it will be dedicated to a game that's coming out in 24 hours. Less
going
than
through
24
all
hours.
The characters.
All the characters.
All the moves.
Full control guide. Yeah, all of that. Yeah. yeah.
Xbox is doing one. I think Friday week.
Okay.
Yeah, and yeah. I think that's when Summer Games Fest is too. So there's a bunch
Ubisoft
of those.
Ubisoft have said they're not doing one.
No, so that. All yeah. of those ones. And at some point it got fucking stupid where every developer was doing their own press conference.
Yes.
But they only had like one game to show. So it's like, well, I don't want to watch a fucking The Crew 2 press conference.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, all of those are basically gone. And it's just these sort of bigger ones that will be at a smaller scale.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to all of that. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's a shame there's no E3, but also there are a bunch of announcy, streamy things going to happen during the next couple of weeks, which is, that's all it is.
Yeah.
More announcements?
Any predictions for the Sony one tomorrow of like,
well,
if they were going to, because I think it's going to be a bunch of Sony-backed VR titles.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They've said it'll launch with 20 games, so I would imagine we'd see the majority of those, if even some of them are... like either existing games on an Oculus or whatever that are just cut together in one of those little trailers. But definitely a bunch of PSVR stuff. They said they'll show that Horizon thing.
Beat Saber's going to be like the new... it's going to be like Skyrim, but for VR, I reckon.
Yeah,
it's like any new VR thing that comes along, it's like, well, you got to mention that
I could imagine
Beat Saber's a part of it.
Yeah. I could imagine them trying to do their own one.
Yeah.
Like
Sony.
Oh, with more licensed stuff for sure. Yeah, yeah. That would be sick.
I think it will be a lot of VR stuff. I think they will give a date to God of War Ragnarok.
Oh, sure,
and I think
yeah.
it will be this year.
Yeah.
And
you'd have to imagine a new Astrobot if they're doing big VR.
Yeah, true.
That would be great. True. That would be the ideal is a new Astrobot with that VR 2. And I guess VR 2 will probably launch this year as well.
Ooh.
Yeah, if this is essentially mostly dedicated to it.
Yeah.
And we're only in the first half of the year.
Yeah. And it's probably hardware they can manufacture more reliably than a PS5.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that they're hoping they can sell a lot more of that than the amount of PS5s they're able to make. But who knows?
That'd be a great end of the year.
I was going to say,
plus a VR
holiday
headset.
Yeah, holiday release.
Yeah. Because if it's not the end of this year, it'd have to be the end of 2023, right?
Probably.
And that seems a long way away.
Yeah.
And the PS... Fuck, man. The PS5 will have been out for 3 years by then.
Yeah.
But it's going to be ages before there's a pro of anything.
Maybe they announce that it's all coming out at the end of next year. And that includes maybe
stuff could be longer than normal because this all makes sense with olden days times. But COVID happened and I think probably, everything is at least a year back from where you would imagine it normally being.
Which is annoying because we felt last year, you know, we were doing the show mostly in lockdown, which was very difficult. But stuff was still coming out. So regularly, content, I was talking to someone about this the other day. Content wise, we were fine. It felt like we had new stuff to talk about nearly every week. And I was feeling like, oh, this is awesome. Video games just
they never die.
They just dodged the pandemic. This is great. And when, you know, the start of it, when cinemas were closing, so movies had to be bumped back.
Yeah.
Games are still coming out. It just delivered straight to your house. Yeah. Awesome. And now that the world's open, what can we do? What can we do if games aren't coming out?
I've got
travel, but I don't want to.
I've got more social occasions than ever to avoid.
Yeah.
And nothing to do during them.
It's annoying.
We can watch all those movies that were delayed. And you can listen to us review them on patreon.com/filthycasualspod.
And if you yourself have a social occasion coming up and you think it might be quite a personal social occasion, then it's a good idea to get your shit together. Get your body in order and trim your hair, for goodness sake.
If you're attending auditions for Puppetry of the Penis and or the Chippendales.
Well, you don't have a big AAA title coming up to use as an excuse to not go to a party.
I got a pretty average AAA title. Yeah, not big.
But you could, I mean, you could use the Lawnmower 4.0.
That's right.
As your excuse. Oh, sorry, I can't come to this party. I got to shave my pubes. It's going to be an all-night job. Yeah. It's really gotten out of control down there.
That means you're not using the Lawnmower 4.0 because that'll get it done quickly.
It's like the old, you
from
know,
Manscaped. Oh, by the way,
I'm washing my hair. I can't come. Yep. Like, I can't go on this date with you. I have to shave my balls
for the hopeful next date with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which
I miss the first one and hopefully go straight to the second.
Maybe we can do a FaceTime. So, boys, sweaty sack summer is approaching.
Oh, okay.
In the Northern Hemisphere.
Well, not yet. Yeah, not here. Cold sack winter.
It's cold sack winter. Okay, I'll try and flip it. And it's time for you to prioritize the comfort of your crotch. That's why the kings of crotch comfort, Manscaped, have spent 2 years designing the most comfortable boxer briefs out there. I've had the... Okay, well, I'm lying here, because we haven't got the boxers yet. I've had the honor of testing out these new boxers.
Oh, the honor! Wow.
My lord.
And I can say it's the softest fabric of any underwear. Oh, maybe it's the perspective of the copywriter.
Yeah.
He's definitely tested them.
Oh, right. He's had the honor. That copywriter OBE, which stands for Original Boxers Experience.
So breathable that it's like gills for your groin. I like that.
Lungs for your loins.
Oh.
What else do you breathe with?
A mouth for down south.
Yep.
They even
lungs for the well-hung.
A throat for your scrote.
Okay. All right. Oxygen, nah. They even trademarked...
For your boxer region.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. They even trademarked the jewel pouch, TM, so you know it's serious. I think it's time you invest in your family jewels. So let your bulge breathe and get 20% off plus free shipping by using code FILTHY at manscaped.com. That was a nice, fun little bit of copy there.
Yeah.
Went in a few different directions.
It was one of the least disturbing ones that ever sent us.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Speaking of fun little bits of copy, a game that has sort of copied a few other things and put them together in a very fun little way.
Yes.
Is something I've been playing. It costs $3.
In a fun average-sized package.
It runs in a window. So it is a smaller package than normal as well. Okay. It's called Vampire Survivors.
Right.
And
this is a Game Pass game?
No, it's on Steam. I think it's only on Steam right now.
Okay.
It costs $3.99.
Ooh.
And it's basically cookie...
If it was $4, I'd be out.
Yeah, that's my limit. Four flat.
If you took Cookie Clicker, but it was like a sort of top-down combat game, this is a kind of that. Now, I'm going to say a bunch
goodbye
of words.
Goodbye, girlfriend.
I'm going to say a bunch of words that might sound unappealing,
okay.
But put together in this package.
Ben Vanel, Tommy Dicelow, and Knox.
So it is kind of a roguelike, kind of a clicker type game, kind of like a top-down, like Diablo style looter shooter almost thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it is pixel art, and it's all these things that easily could just feel like this sort of boring, generic,
a
like
bit overdone at this point, easy to sort of dismiss,
uncreative kind of thing. But in this, they work really well together. It is like this kind of Castlevania styled game where you this little character in the middle of the screen, all you can do is move up, down, left, right.
Okay.
You can use your mouse or your keys or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you're automatically whipping, right?
Okay.
And so you've got a little whip that comes out sort of like the cookie clicker thing where you get a cookie every second at the start or whatever. And you're whipping to whichever direction you're facing, can either be left or right. Those are the two of the cardinal directions. You can't whip up. You can't whip down.
Oh.
But later on, as you kill these enemies that are sort of approaching towards you in like a horde mode type of thing.
Right.
Ton of enemies you're sort of dodging and trying to kill. You'll get experience, which lets you get different weapons. Every time you level up, you can either get a different weapon or a power up that gives you more armor or more health or whatever. And you are trying to go for as long as you can. More and more enemies will show up. Different types of enemies will show up. And you'll be collecting gold and experience along the way. When you die, you use this gold to get permanent upgrades that upgrade your whole account for every run or whatever.
Right.
So
it sounds like Loop Hero, except instead of a top-down loop, it was a side-to-side
loop. It's like a real-time loop. So you're going up and down and left and right, too, on sort of like a world that, you know, loops back on itself.
Right. Yeah,
you
yeah,
know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah. Yep.
You go up for long enough, it's like you've gone down for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
You yeah, see what like, I mean? You go to the left, like you come out the right.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yep.
It might be like Loop Hero. I never ended up... but
it's,
so...
Yeah, it's pretty much the same, because it's like when you die or you go back to camp, you upgrade your camp.
Mm-hmm.
And that applies permanent upgrades to right. your character. Yeah, yeah.
And your camp is just a main menu for this.
Yeah, right.
And so you're doing this like bullet hell kind of game where you're dodging these enemies and trying to kill them and getting these upgrades. And it's super simple, very straightforward, really satisfying. It just feels nice, and the enemies cool. move at a good speed.
Have a look at
there are little kind like. Of pockets that you try and weave your way through that are fun enough, and it lasts for, you know, 10 minutes maybe.
Right.
And then you get a little upgrade, and you go back in the next time, and you're a little more powerful. There are four different characters.
Oh, so you're quite small on the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of enemies coming at you at some point.
Yep, yep, yep.
10 out of 10 on Steam.
Hello. Oh.
Well, okay. I've never seen Steam review. Oh, I guess Steam reviews. No, that I have seen that.
What,
I see that every day.
What did you think I meant?
I thought you meant that Steam had rated its own game, and it's like, well, that's pretty... I don't know if I trust it's the service selling interest, me it to rate.
True. Well, I mean, they didn't make it.
Yeah.
They're just getting money from
it. I think it's made in JavaScript.
Yeah, it looks... It does look pretty,
Looks very... This looks cool.
It's really Moorish and fun, and it's the sort of thing you can just chuck on for a couple of minutes in between doing other stuff that... It's, you know, very old-fashioned and arcadey sort of looking.
Yeah.
You get little treasure chests at some point that'll give you a random upgrade, and you're going through and trying to last as long as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Each of the different weapons works in a slightly different way, so you get knives that shoot out of you, or like a magic one that shoots fireballs in a random direction, or like an axe that kind of throws up and then goes down, like in Castlevania.
Yep.
It's really satisfying and well-built. And I want to just keep going and get everything. There are four different characters.
Mm-hmm.
You only have one unlocked at the start. But I want to keep playing this in between doing more important stuff.
According to the developer's Twitter, it is on PC Game Pass.
It is on Game Pass?
Yeah, that's where I'd seen it, yeah.
Right. Well, I've accidentally given them $4 more than I needed to.
Not quite.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's true. That sense remains mine.
They can pry that from your cult dead vampire fingers.
Right, so it is on Steam and it's on Game Pass, and it's a good time.
Yeah, I'm going to get it.
Sounds cool.
I'm going to get it for sure.
It's a lot of fun, and I assume we'll come to other things later. You would imagine they would want it to.
Yep.
It's the sort of thing where you could chuck this on a phone and play this for 5 minutes on the train.
Mm.
And Bubby, you're having a good time.
Bubby.
Yeah, Bubby.
Bubba.
I couldn't decide whether to say buddy or baby, and it came out Bubby, and I was
like
fine
Bubby.
With it.
No, Bubby's nice.
Yeah.
Vampire Survivors.
I've been playing a bit of a PC game as well, a bit of a PC classic.
Oh.
We know what it is.
I love a classic. Yeah. God, it's good. What's the point, do you reckon? How old can something be before you... Because there's an instant classic.
Sure.
Yeah.
And there's a modern classic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But can something become a classic again? Or is it like music where classical is an era?
Okay, well, what does something... I'm very skeptical of instant classic because it's like... What does that just mean?
Oh, it just means it's good.
Oh, it's really, really, really good.
Yeah,
but it's
like
it how much stuff comes out that there's so much, not just in games, but in anything, there's so much hype about at the time. And then, you know, 5 years on, you realize, I haven't heard anyone talk about that post the week that it came out.
Yeah.
Therefore, not a classic.
Yeah.
But what's a modern classic? Is that just within the last, like
10
years?
Last decade, I would say. Yeah,
yeah, sure.
Roughly.
Turn of the millennium.
Dark Souls is a modern classic that is moving into becoming
a classic.
A classic.
I think now that Elden Ring's out and now that we're getting a lot of games that are copying that formula, I think it's certified classic.
It might be.
And it's,
mate, that is classic.
Influential, right? If it's had enough time to be influential.
Yes. I think that's the. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I'm satisfied with that conversation.
So our first episode of the pod. Classic.
Classic.
Now it's classic.
This episode, instant
classic. Yeah. Well, I think this game, because I mean, the ultimate ones, they become all three, right?
This conversation absolutely not in the classic books.
This is classic us.
Steam would have rated it 10 out of 10.
Yeah. That's true.
Has nothing to do with video games at all and is a waste of everyone's time. I didn't realize that's classic us. Yeah.
I wish I'd have known I could get this conversation for free on the main feed rather than paying for it on Patreon.
We should call the Patreon podcast Classic Casuals.
Classic Casuals.
That's good.
Right?
A little bit of a Frasier sting at the start.
And then people don't like that. No, wait. That's new casuals.
Oh, and then we go back.
We delete it. People
iCasuals 2.0.
Classic casuals.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
This game would have been, I mean, the true ones, they're all three, right? They come out, people like, this is an instant classic. Yep. People loving it. And then it's like even a few years later, the modern classic. And then now, a game called The Secret of Monkey Island is regarded as a classic of the point and click genre.
I think it's probably the lead one. It is the most iconic kind of when you list influential and well-regarded point-and-click games. Secret of Monkey Island's probably the number one.
Mm-hmm.
I would say so. Yeah, it's the proto. I mean, I think for most people, it's like whichever one you went to first is probably. Like when I think of these games, I think of Sam and Max Hit the Road,
right?
Because I played that before. I'd never played this back in the day. I played Sam and Max. I really loved that. And then I went and got Day of the Tentacle back in the day because it was kind of similar looking art style. And this one, this series was always a bit kind of, I guess by that point there were already a couple out and the first one was kind of, it was a little bit too archaic looking at that point.
Right.
Like it
looked a bit like a classic.
It did look too much like a classic. Yeah. And I was at the age where you have think to classic stuff is bad.
Look old, right? Yeah, like when you're 15 and you're like, Casablanca, it's black and white.
Right. Yep.
But it is a classic.
It is a classic. It's nothing can change that.
Yes.
So I've been playing this week and boy oh boy, it is very hard to rewire your brain to the 1990s point and click logic of gameplay. I think they definitely, LucasArts kind of learn, you know, a lot about this as they go along. Like, so I re-downloaded Sam and Max Hit the Road as well, just because I was like feeling the point and click kind of vibe. And that has a lot more, maybe it's just because, I mean, a big part of it is probably like I've played that one before, so I still kind of remember things about it. But it does just feel a little more intuitive of like, the things that you do kind of early on are sort of showing you how these mechanics work. Whereas Monkey Island's got a lot of stuff where like going up onto the full island map where you go onto the lookout and you just kind of go a different direction. Yep. That's never like really stated that that's there.
Yeah.
You just kind of leave that area at the start and you kind of think you're in the main bit. And then, you know, you just reach a point where you've hit a brick wall and you're just kind of backtracking over every little area, looking everywhere. And you're like, oh, there's all these other... Am I meant to be here? Like, there's no point where it said, like, hey, by the way, if you go up here, you can go to the whole rest of the island. There's a bit where you've got to, like, sneak into a kitchen. If you go and try and go in there, the chef will tell you to go away. And so you have to wait for him to just, like, walk out into the bar and then go in after him, which, again, isn't kind of a setup that it's sort of shown you that that's how things can work in this version of puzzle solving. I thought that was just kind of a little set dressing animation of him walking around. Like I thought he'd still see me and tell me to fuck off.
This is stuff that people said about these games at the time too.
Sure.
To be
They were hard games at the time.
Yeah. So I'm having to kind of have the, I'm trying to like do as much as I can. Like I'm getting bits where I'm like, oh, okay, obviously this goes here and I give this to this person.
Right.
And then I'm still having to have a guide open and a lot of the time it's like, yeah, I thought I did that. Like you know.
It's funny. So you're playing the remastered version of it. And that's it's right. interesting that in that, in the 20 years that were between those two versions coming out, I played that back in the time when that remastered version came out as well. They haven't altered any of that sort of thing as well. Like all of the puzzles and some of the more obscure ones that they've had 20 years of feedback on, they're unchanged. It is just a skin over the top
of
the original
game. I kind of respect that because they've got a thing where you can like hit a button and it like it jumps back and forth between the remastered visuals and the classic visuals, which I guess if they'd changed it too much, you wouldn't be able to have it just... You know, you wouldn't be able to have it like toggle.
For sure. So that, same as those Halo ones and stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not saying this is a criticism of it. Like it's, you know, it's obviously very influential and it is satisfying when you get it right. And I can imagine back in the day just beating your head against the wall, but then finally getting it. And or like I remember with Day of the Tentacle, I had to, I can't remember how I found out that this existed, but like sending away for a guide of it on a floppy disk that I had open in another window of like just a text document of like how to do it all, because I just got to this bit where I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I literally have no idea what to do. And even that in its own way of like finally tracking down the answer through someone else when it wasn't like an immediate, like that felt like you had done this like real world kind of puzzle solving thing of like you had gone out and put the effort in and taken the time to find out how to do it, even though it was someone just telling you how to do it.
It's one of the hardest things in the world to do with puzzle games, which point and click games basically are. It's like, that's why stuff like Outer Wilds is so good to me, is because it can have these really complicated leaps of logic that you need to make or whatever, not leaps, but processes that you need to go through to figure out the answer to the puzzle and to guide someone enough that you don't feel like you're being told the answer or shown the answer, but that you are figuring it out with stuff like that kitchen thing. It's the hardest thing in the world to do.
I mean, yeah, there's like a bit where there's a guy that wants you to get rid
other than being a mother.
There's a guy that wants you to get rid of some rats and you're like, before he'll help you out. And then you come across some gopher repellent. And I was like, well, let me guess. The gopher repellent is going to be the thing to get rid of the rats, even though it's a different, you know what I mean? It's like a different animal, but you just like kind of things like that. But yeah, I am still really enjoying it, even though I'm for the most part, like, you know, doing a few things in a row and getting a bit of progress and then just being like, ah, oh, fuck, I don't know what I'm doing now. I'll just go look at the guide. But yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I'm really enjoying playing through this and just knowing that, yeah, this is where it all starts. And then going to Sam and Max, which is 5 years on,
I think even less maybe,
but it's still, there's, you can just see they learn enough kind of in that, in the intervening year, because it's, is it, it's, yeah, it's Monkey Island, then it's,
I think they go Monkey Island 1 and 2 kind of back to
back.
Yes.
Then maybe Day of the Tentacle, then Sam and Max.
Day of the Tentacle, because Maniac Mansion was before Monkey Island. And then Sam and Max, then like Full Throttle, then that third Monkey Island. It's something like that.
Yep. But just the weird...
And like Loom in the middle.
And the weird like advertising... The Loom's advertised in Monkey Island, which I find funny. Just the weird kind of like writing and tone and performances that are in these games, like... that is very consistent across. I like that there's just this like kind of core team of them that are sort of working across all of these games where the vibe and the humor is all kind of very similar. And I remember finding so much stuff about Sam and Max like deeply unsettling when I was playing it back in the day. Like I remember there's a thing where you can, if you try and pick something up that Sam won't, that he can't pick up. He'll be like, oh, I can't pick that up. And you could just like do it again and again and again and again. And his dialogue would start to change where he'd be like, listen, stop trying to get me to do this.
Yeah.
And then you would do it again. And he would just be like, that's it. I'm not talking to you anymore. And if you tried to get him to do things, he would just like whimper at you. And I remember really feeling like, oh, the game's like communicating with me.
Right.
Like I'm scared. My computer's angry at me.
Yeah.
But yeah, really enjoying it. Gonna crack through with it and try and do all of them because there's that new one coming out. What the?
I think they might have said this year.
Yeah, maybe.
I can't remember if that one was meant to be episodic either, because you've got those the Monkey Island 1 and 2, then Curse. And then Escape from Monkey Island, which was the 3D one. And then those Telltale ones,
right,
which are those episodic ones.
Yes.
Right.
So but there's a lot of Monkey Islands to get through before
fun
you're
performances.
Done.
You were telling me, Adam, that you prefer the original kind of visuals of it.
I like the classics.
Yeah.
And I agree. Like you switch back and it's like, it does look way vibier. I wish that the remastered version was just like that, but up-resed slightly and with the more modern-y sort of like approach to the inventory and stuff. Like
it's very different art styles as well. It's not like it's a pixel version and like then a hand-drawn version. The faces of the characters look completely different.
Mm. Yeah, it's a bit of a shame. Like there's something about it that even though it's way more detailed and, you know, it's like painted backdrops and everything, there's something about it that just looks a little soulless compared to the original one. Like one where you're at like a shack that's at night and there's like light coming out of the windows. When it's kind of painted, it's like, oh yeah, cool, that looks like what that would look like. But you go into the OG and it's like this, you know, this harsh blue and then this like really vibrant orange kind of like poking out through the windows, which just looks so much more visually dynamic when it's like 256 colors versus like, oh, well, that's just a painting of what that looks like.
They had to go for a style because they were so restricted. Whereas, yeah, the remaster is just like basic.
Yep. Anyway, that's my recommendation for this week, folks. Check out 1990s The Secret of Monkey Island.
Well, you said that the new one looked a bit soulless. And that got me thinking about a little game I've been playing recently that's filled with souls.
Called is this a classic? A modern classic?
I don't know.
Instant classic.
I don't think it was an instant classic. I could be wrong, but I wasn't following this franchise at the time of this game's release.
Okay.
Dark Souls 3.
Oh, I didn't think it was actually going to be Dark Souls.
Yeah.
Right. So you finished Bloodborne.
I did.
Right, and now have gone... I guess the next one that came out after Bloodborne was Dark Souls 3.
Yes, going backwards. Yeah. I didn't mention it on the pod, but I finished Bloodborne, or at least I got to the end where you can make a choice, and one of the choices makes the game end.
Right.
And one of them makes you fight another boss. And I got to the... I made the boss choice.
Yeah.
And I haven't beaten the boss yet.
Okay.
But I basically finished
it. If you'd have chosen the other one, then it would have been over.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's over. But yeah, loved Bloodborne. Loved it. I think it's one of my favorite games of all time.
Yeah.
Like, an instant classic. Ben classic?
Instant BB classic, yes. when we redo our top games of all time, it may be in there.
Oh, okay.
It's a good ass game.
It's a fucking good... And so I was like, baby, give me some more.
Yeah.
And yeah, Dark Souls 3 is the next most recent. And I've played the start. I beat the first boss that's meant to kill you. I'm like, oh, cool. I know how to play Souls games now. Mm-hmm. You know, like first try, just went through and... it's awesome. I love it. I love the visuals. I love how that tone and aesthetic and the story stuff and the lore is all so consistent in vibe and feeling across at least like, so I've tried Demon's Souls and Bloodborne and the other ones that are not in that series are a bit more different, but the Souls one and Bloodborne and Elden Ring, I guess, share that gothic sort of feel.
Totally.
And I love it. I love how it looks. It's holding up visually. It's like a 2016 game, so it still looks great. And being able to like directly translate the gameplay of initially Elden Ring and then Bloodborne and now this is so satisfying. To be like, oh, I know how to play these now.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And to get so much satisfaction out of, like just smashing your way through a level and then being like, oh, great, I've got like 2,000 souls. And just having that loop down pat now.
Yeah.
Just started it, but I'm going to... play all of it.
You know what? Who cares that these assholes can't bring out new games this year because of COVID? We're playing Monkey Island. Yeah. We're playing Dark Souls 3. Yeah. We're set up, baby.
I got JavaScript shit I'm going to play, whatever.
Also, there's a bunch of indie games that we'll probably talk about next week.
Yeah.
I've dipped in on a bunch that are new and we can expand.
Well, something that I want to get to, which I know you've been experiencing as well, Adam.
Yeah.
The
deep depression?
Yeah.
Not deep.
Give me some.
Sorry.
The Nintendo Switch Online members only purchases that one could make of a Nintendo 64 and Mega Drive controller.
We're actually not allowed to talk about this in front of Ben.
Yeah, it's true.
You've got to be a member.
You and I had a great interaction in our chat where I said... because I got alerted. I sort of had seen the email that they were on sale, but I'd sort of ignored it. And then I was having lunch in Brisbane with friend of the show, Greg Larson, who was like, I'm going to buy one of those controllers. And I was like, that's a great, why aren't I doing that? So I said to you, I just bought the N64 controller. And you sent me.
And you said to me, they're back on sale if you were interested.
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
And then you sent me a screenshot of the top of your order that just said, one Nintendo 64 controller. And I said, awesome. I went the full madman and got the Mega Drive one as well. And then you sent me another screenshot, which was
just
slightly scrolled down see.
Uncropped the same photo. And I've got sitting on the desk over there the Switch versions of the N64 and the Mega Drive controller.
Yeah, I hadn't bothered with these that they'd done for the NES and the SNES for whatever reason. But I kind of was thinking, oh, they're just like a little knick-knack. But there really is something to be said for how much better those games feel with those actual controllers.
The 64 in particular, and I've always had this stupid problem with emulated 64 games if I've played them, is that the throw of the stick on the analog stick of the original 64 controller is much longer than a modern analog stick, which has a shorter distance
that
you need to
travel. That was my immediate response to picking this up and playing Super Mario 64.
It feels completely different,
Within 2 seconds, I was like, oh, God damn it, Adam was right. Fucking hell. people listening who are a little younger than us, with now everything comes out, like a lot of stuff is cross-platform.
Right.
The Switch has multiple different control styles. If you play on PC, there's any number of ways you can play. Mm. It's easy to forget that there was an era where the games were really made for this one controller. And in the case of something like Super Mario 64, designed around showing you how to use this specific controller,
and
except for
fucking,
the D-pad.
How fucking weird that controller was too, where it had 6 face buttons, except only really 2 of them were face buttons and the other 4 were meant to be, they were the C buttons because they were meant to be camera controls specifically before they thought of, I'll put another stick on there.
Yes.
Yep.
So there's kind of fewer buttons than you have access to with modern games.
Yeah, and any games where, like if you're playing something with the Switch Pro controller and the C buttons are just the camera, then you can just use the right stick for that. But then there are some games where the C buttons are also buttons where you're kind
of
having to do this
stuff like
weird, and it's like kind of hard to remember like what, you know, what's doing what. So just, they are really worthwhile. And using the Mega Drive one too and remembering that it had that, that crazy like 8-directional D-pad, which everything just feels so different. Like
it feels,
playing with that,
they're so well made and like kind of the right weight too.
Yep.
Like they feel weighty in a good way. They connect via Bluetooth to a PC as well.
Yep.
If you want to do that, so you can use them as like emulator controllers.
Yeah,
which they are very, very high quality versions of the other similar things that you can get of that style for PC.
Right.
You can get a lot of very cheaply made USB N64 style controllers, but this is like, you know, made by
the
company
who
made that controller.
I really want to play.
Blew off the dust of the old machine in the factory.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just cranked it back up again.
I'm looking forward to that Sonic Origins game that's coming out, since finding out that it's going to have like a little story mode thing in it where you just basically play through all of the games in one interconnected little thing, but there's like those animated little cutscenes that they were doing for Sonic Mania.
Oh, for the bonus DLC? Is that those cutscenes that, like, if you buy the Super Deluxe Edition?
I hope not. But I think there's little things kind of like linking all the games together and making them feel like they're a one cohesive thing. And I was like, oh, this would be cool to play this with the little Mega Drive controller.
Mm.
But again, knowing Sega, I bet that's not an option, or you have to pay, you know, $20 extra to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Is that that's out soon, right?
In a couple of weeks or something.
Yeah,
End of this month, I believe. But yeah, they're great products. I've been playing a bit of Rystar. Rystar was a game made by Sonic Team. It was their attempt at like another mascot.
Right.
And he's pretty slow moving.
He's a wry little star.
Ooh. He's a wry little star. He the main,
like you yourself, Tommy.
Thank you. The way you control him is you push a button to kind of send his arms out, and he kind of grabs enemies and he kind of smashes them into himself. And
cool.
Kind of use the angle of the D-pad to sort of aim. And so there's a lot of like swinging on things and getting momentum and, you know, ricocheting around the levels. It's got like a very similar sort of like aesthetic and vibe in the music to the Sonic games. And he's great. Mm. Bring back Rystar. Make a new little Rystar game.
Yeah. Okay. There's enough games on that Switch Online thing now too, where if you're just buying it to use with a Switch, I don't think it's the craziest thing in the world.
Right.
These controllers. But fuck, that shit is so weird. Because I remember they added some new games to it this week and I looked it up.
Yeah.
On the NES, they added Pinball. And on the Super NES, they added Congo's Caper and Rival Turf.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
That discussion about classics came in handy for this episode, because now we've got an example of what is not.
Once they're getting into that territory, it's like people are always like, oh, apparently they're about to drop the Game Boy Online for it. It's like, when you're putting up, what is it? Congo's Caper. It's like, drop the game. You've run out of steam on this one. That's why you've got all the games on there that you need. You've got everything on there that people want
to
play.
You don't need to pad it out with Congo's Conquer Kai.
You've got the ones on there that you have the licenses for that aren't too tricky for you to put on there.
Yeah.
chuck on some Game Boy shit. Get us all the Wario games.
Mm. But whatever, yeah, those controllers are really, really well made and certainly not an essential thing. But I'm also keen, I haven't done this yet, but I think it works, to use them as a controller for regular games. I'd love to play a new game with that 64
Because they work
controller.
With the menu. Like, you can scroll through the menu. So I did think that. If the Mega Drive controller has... I love the Mega Drive controller. Six. Three buttons in a row.
Man.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
good. And it's so massive for what it is. It's just like back when they were called pads.
Massive, but pretty light at the same time.
Yeah. You could chuck it across the room. That's when people got into that habit of throwing controllers nowadays.
I would love to play, something on the Switch that is pretty, that is really using all the buttons with a Mega Drive controller that just has the three buttons on it, just to see how it divvies them up.
Fuck yeah. That's what I want too.
Someone should make a game specifically for the Mega Drive controller then.
Do it for us. We'll talk about we'll talk about it maybe. But also it might just pass us by and we won't bother talking about it.
Yeah, and if it's bad, we'll be genuinely critical of it. So, no pandering.
But we talk about plenty, as we have done this week.
Yeah, we've talked for an hour. Yep. And that's all we're obligated to do.
We're not even obligated.
No, we're not even obligated to talk.
There's no union making us do anything.
All right, guys. Thank you for listening. Filthycasuals.com.au. For all the stuff that we do, get on the Patreon. Get yourself a bonus little episode. And also worth mentioning that you instantly get access to the full back catalogue of them. So there's heaps on there already.
There's so much.
The live show July the 2nd, comedyrepublic.com.au.
Yes.
For tickets to that. We will see you there. Check out all our videos on YouTube. We've just finished a series of a full motion video dating game that we played.
People are fucking loving it.
People are frothing that
Get
one.
Around it.
Yep.
I think we'll do something similar soon.
Yes.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun doing that one, so yeah.
Tons of videos on the channel, so check them out. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next time, and as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals.
Classic adjective, judged over a period of time to be the highest quality and outstanding of its kind.
Okay.
So even the definition doesn't have a definition.
What about a period of time of like 60 minutes? Would that be enough?
Like 59, 43, 44, 45, something around that.
Okay.
Plus intro.
Definitely not a classic.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.